Welcome to another episode of Tony Pantalaresco's show, Everything Goes.
Everybody, welcome to another segment of
Everything Goes.
Come to another segment of Everything
Goes. Everything goes, and boy, does it ever go.
Tony has returned and is regularly live streaming on Twitter, Rumble, and Twitch. Find him at tonp.substack.com. I am your host, Zach from powerofthepulse.com. Thanks for tuning in. It is an honor to be on your platform, Tony. And this is independs.podbean.com.
Everything goes. Everything's going to go and go and go.
Welcome, everybody. It's Zach from powerofthepulse.com. Today is the 26th of the 3rd, 2024, and this is the 35th podcast that I run. Today we're going to be talking about a few different topics. Again, with the more laser-focused approach that I'm getting some really good feedback with, so thank you, everyone. We're going to be talking a little bit about calcium and sodium. Sodium being the main component in salt, building on or adding a little bit to what we talked about in the previous episode that got a lot of people really thinking about potassium and sodium. So talking a little bit more there about its relations with calcium. I'm also going to be talking a little bit about arthritis, bone broth, and then to wrap up, the digitization of our food industry and of food production. Firstly, thank you everyone very much for your concern. Recently, there haven't been that many shows posted. There's been like a 10-day gap or something. So thank you to everyone who reached out to check in if I was okay and who's been asking about the show. Thank you everyone for your great feedback. So what happened is that Podbean for a number of days was running maintenance, so we couldn't have a live show. And then something with my schedule changed, and sticking to a Tony's live stream schedule of 6 p.m. EST and 3 p.m. EST on a Saturday, I just became quite difficult. So for currently and probably for the next few weeks, I'll just be doing these whenever I can. I'll do my best to stick to a Tony's old schedule, but if that's not possible, then we'll just have to work through it. I spoke to Tony and he gave me the go ahead for just changing the schedule to whatever suits us at the time. Okay, so as always, our announcements, links to Tony are in the show notes, independs.podbean.com. You can follow Tony on his various platforms. You can donate to Tony. TonP@myyahoo.com is the email you need to email Tony and book a consultation. If you want to email me, you can email me at info@powerofthepulse.com. Now, I am going to be uploading these episodes. I already did with the previous one, and the same with this one. I'm going to start uploading these shows on my Substack, on a specific section under my Substack. And that way, this is going to be, I hope, very useful for all of our listeners here. For a specific reason, when I upload to Substack, I can put in the option for a transcript. So now, you can go in and hit that Control F button and search the page and find whatever you want within that transcript and skip to different sections, use it as a reference in the future. Whatever, you can do that through the transcript function when I upload these to Substack. So a link, of course, to that will also be in the show notes, independs.podbean.com. You can also follow the show on Podcast Addict and Player FM. All right. Welcome, French, Waldo, Lou. What's up, guys? My mom and two friends have this issue, potassium and sodium. Yeah, you know that, in fact, a disbalance in potassium and sodium, amongst, of course, many, many problems, and a few of which we discussed in the last episode, you can actually have an edema. You can have a building up of fluids So if anyone's actually experiencing that, like you're pitting edema or something like that, and if you're suffering this, then you'll know what I'm talking about. You can go and look into that, because that is very likely, you know, a sodium overload. Because as we discussed in the last episode, our intake in our modern industrialized worlds has too much sodium and not enough potassium. And of course, sodium and potassium are meant to be balanced in and out of our cells with the sodium-potassium pump, where the cell wants potassium inside of it and sodium outside in the interstitial fluid, the fluid between the cells or outside the cells. Now, last episode, we talked about how when you take too much sodium, while that sodium is being cleared out of the body, of course, sodium being the major component in salts, while that sodium is being cleared out of the body, potassium is also removed, furthering the disbalance and the deficiency of potassium. And last episode, we talked about how potassium and a deficiency in potassium can interfere with the absorption of calcium. So then you make a direct link between potassium and sodium and calcium, excess sodium, and problems absorbing calcium. Now, today we take that a step further, because excess sodium can leach calcium from bone. So even further, if you take this even further, not only is there an indirect connection between too much salt and problems with the bone, problems with calcium absorption, not only is that connection indirect through creating a potassium deficiency, but it also can happen directly. Excess sodium disbalances potassium, which is necessary for calcium, and it also does this directly. In this regard, perturbation of renal epithelial functions by excess sodium interfered with the ability to handle calcium. Salt loading resulted in urinary calcium loss and increased bone turnover in postmenopausal women who already had low bone mass from estrogen deficiency. So this is something I thought is quite a good addendum, something very valuable to add to that, because a lot of people are complaining about these kinds of ailments, issues with the teeth, issues with the joints, arthritis, other problems. So I'm going to leave the link to that paper, which is just one paper proving this effect in the show notes, where excess sodium, and isn't it very interesting how everything in the fast food world, everything, even just in our regular eating habits, is all about adding more salt for flavor. Oh, you don't like it? Add more salt. And we're very used to just even adding salt without thinking, and especially in some cultures as well. It's, I mean, you add salt before you even eat the food. So just for a week, try a lesser dosage of salt, just a little bit less. You know, I already personally, you know, I am already having salt, not only through the amounts put in cooking, but also through pickles, olives, etc. But experiment with that potassium, experiment with lowering a little bit the excess salt content, and you'll know when you're having too much salt. You'll feel that salty, dehydrated sensation in the mouth, even in the stomach. And you'll know what I'm talking about when you start just lowering that amount a little bit and experimenting with a pinch of potassium in your water, on your soup, And if you have good results, then go ahead and continue. Now, with arthritis. Now, arthritis can result from an accumulation of lactic and uric acid that is not being cleared out. There may also be components here of boron deficiency. You can use copper potentially as an arthritic inhibitor. You can use B3, so refer to my previous show on here about B3, niacinamide, or niacin, niacinamide being derived from niacin. I'm just going to read one sentence here, and then we're going to move to the meat and bones, which there's a pun intended there, as you'll see in a minute. So with arthritis and B3, of course, B3 measurably improves joint mobility, muscle strength, and decreases fatigability, increasing cellular energy levels. It increases maximal muscle working capacity, reduces or completely eliminates arthritic joint pain, and niacinamide helps broken strands of DNA and improves many kinds of functions in the central nervous system. Now, the big point that I've prepared here, though, is bone broth. So, I talked a little bit about this, and I've been talking to some people and realizing that there is more to be added here. So, I'm going to read from the book Nourishing Broth by Sally Fallon. Specifically in regards to the utility for arthritis and other joint problems. Of course, we've talked at length about bone broth providing the perfect combinations of amino acids which build proteins, of providing gelatin and cartilage, providing the building blocks of our skin, our connective tissue, our joints, even our muscles. Let's take this a step further. Oral therapies using bovine tracheal cartilage, shark cartilage, type 2 collagen, collagen hydrolysate, and glucosamine have all shown benefits to patients with rheumatoid arthritis. During his lifetime, William Lane, of Sharks Don't Get Cancer fame, marketed shark cartilage. I'm not marketing shark cartilage, but this is just an example here. This man marketed shark cartilage for rheumatoid arthritis, as well as for cancer and other diseases. Now, why would he, just a little nitpicking, a little point there, why would anyone promote or suggest cartilage for cancer? Well, cancer is not this misunderstood, incurable problem. It is a problem that is biological through loading of toxicity to the point where we are damaging ourselves and cannot repair ourselves. And in this case, it is exhibited in a lack of self-destruction. The cells that are toxic and damaged are not the self-destruction mechanism. The apoptosis pathway is not triggered, and instead of the malignant cell being killed off, it starts to multiply like a healthy cell would. Except it's not a healthy cell; it's a damaged, genetically mutated, toxically loaded cell. So the simple connection there is that with bone broth, with providing all of these amino acids, and by extension these proteins, by providing all of these building blocks, by providing all of this nourishment to the body, that will aid in the repair process. So that is why someone like this would talk about, using cartilage for repairing cancer. Of course, bone broth will just take all of the goodness in the cartilage, but also the bones, not only the cartilage, but also the bones and the meat itself. We'll talk about that after this little segment here, and put that in the soup and make it very available. There are people that will tell you, oh, well, you know, cow meat is very high, you know, beef is very high in all of these vitamins, but how did these vitamins get into the cow? Well, the cow was eating grass, be a vegan. Well, the cow has this massive body. That cow is very heavy. And there's a lot that goes into transforming and synthesizing and digesting and breaking down that grass into something that can be utilized in its body and stored in its body and something that we can use. When you eat animal product, the nutrients and trace elements are far more available to you because they're already in a living, or they already were in a living being. They were already broken down or synthesized or stored for later usage. Now, with bone broth, you take it a step further. And it becomes the nutrients and the building blocks and the trace elements become far, far more available to you. And in a much more suitable combination than if you were to take a synthetic collagen or even a gelatin from which the collagen is synthesized. And particularly, bone broth will have a massive advantage over taking amino acids. So for people, let's say with blood pressure, you know, take taurine, and for growing children, you give them, you know, other amino acids. And as you go through, you know, the health food industry and you do research for whatever you're dealing with and whatever your requirements are, you'll find that different amino acids are recommended for different conditions. But the truth is, because we're not a petri dish in a lab, the importance is not just on the singular amino acid and its function, but in the balance, as we've discussed before, as this book has talked about, the balance is incredibly important between these amino acids so that they can be utilized correctly. They can be used to build proteins that run our systems. So now, bone broth has this incredible advantage because it provides a very realistic, usable, and balanced combination of these different amino acids. You're probably not leaving anything out when you boil the meat with the cartilage and the bones. We'll talk about that a little bit. And even with things like zinc, even with iodine content, with zinc content, with selenium content, you will get a much more bioavailable product from your animal product, from your meats, your eggs, and your bone broth. You can verify this. The Weston A. Price Foundation talked about it, but it's also very logical. Now, interestingly, I've seen people that for arthritis sufferers actually recommend that you hold off on red meat in the afternoon. And there's a very specific reasoning about that. I won't comment too much on that. But if you are suffering from arthritis or pre-arthritis symptoms, then I would recommend you experiment. You see, eat your heavy animal products in the morning or by lunchtime, and then hold off on those meats in the afternoon and see what happens. See if, you know, you feel an increase in energy. If after a few weeks your symptoms alleviate, test this, you know, to begin with, test this one day on, one day off, and give it a week. See what happens. If you see a short-term gain, then try it the next day. Try it the next day. If you don't, then be patient. Give it a week and see what happens. Okay. During his lifetime, William Lane, PhD, recommended shark cartilage for rheumatoid arthritis as well as for cancer and other diseases. Although Lane's trumped-up claims for anteoangiogenesis from oral use were roundly dismissed, the scientist who founded the field of studies on shark cartilage for rheumatoid arthritis are few. But a 2012 study showed benefits for rats in terms of improved joint alignment and smooth articular surface. So what's happening is that they provided this cartilage in a form that the rats could utilize, and they had a great improvement. Not surprisingly, glucosamine has been tried on rheumatoid arthritis, not only because it can repair cartilage, as discussed in Chapter 9 on osteoarthritis, but because of its track record also for lowering circulating levels of TNF-alpha, and C-reactive protein, two biomarkers which are used to measure the progression of rheumatoid arthritis and other inflammatory disorders. So these are immune responses. In a study published in ISRN Pharmacology in 2013, rats treated with glucosamine showed not only reduced levels of those biomarkers, and therefore, you can imagine also, because this is a natural product, it's not actually shutting off the immune system, then you can conclude from that, that it's highly likely that this glucosamine has actually helped with the inflammation, because remember, the inflammation is not bad. The inflammation is a response that is meant to repair the body. Levels of these biomarkers reduced, and the symptoms and changes in the joints were reversed. The researchers concluded that glucosamine suppressed the chronic inflammatory phase of rheumatoid arthritis and obtained a rapid and significant beneficial effect. Overall, the studies on glucosamine are inconsistent. Now, why would they be inconsistent? Because what they're giving to the test subjects, to the mice or the rats or even the people, the form is differing, the dosages are differing, and you may not have the same effect if you're giving it just in, synthesized lab powdered form, as opposed to a natural form. Overall, the studies, are inconsistent whether researchers are trying it on osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis or even other diseases. The fact has led researchers to try all manners of doses as well as combinations with other remedies. In 2012, a team from a university in Tokyo tested glucosamine methionine, which, if memory serves correctly, has a sulfur component, and a combination of glucosamine plus methionine on rats. They determined glucosamine and methionine each worked in minor fashion alone, but much better in combination, a result that suggests to us, the need for a traditional diet balanced in methionine-rich muscle meats, as well as collagen-rich skin and bones. Methionine, of course, is a very useful tool in cellular detoxification, strengthening, not forcing like a lot of those chelating elements, but strengthening the body's detoxification, natural detoxification pathways, and helping the body deal with, particularly when you're exposed to a toxic load through your environment. Rats chose based on soy protein would be low in methionine unless extra has been added. Aha. This feeds back into what we were talking about maybe a month ago in, the soy protein versus the animal product. Given that glucosamine cannot be patented, or was, following the money, talking about the industrialization of, and the commercialization of so-called health. It is not surprising that researchers have tried to improve on it. So they chemically synthesize it or they extract it. And now they want to patent it and they want their, you know, cash machine. Accordingly, the pharmacology unit at blah 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 in Pakistan took an interest in the synthetic manipulation of amino sugars to develop some efficient pharmacophores. Because good old glutamine had not proved good enough, of course, to combat severe inflammatory rheumatoid arthritis, they came up with a novel synthetic analog and tested it on rats. In inflammation research, they announced beta-D-glucosamine had both anti-arthritis and anti-inflammatory properties and could be useful in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. So, the takeaway here is more proof and more information for everyone, more information for you regarding using bone broth and the goodness in bone broth. We've talked about collagen, you know, we've talked about bone broth for maintaining your musculature, your strength. We've talked about nourishing you with bone broth. We've even talked a little bit about, you know, strengthening the body and protecting or preventing or even on the road to defeating cancer using bone broth. And now, here is some information for anyone that is dealing with bone issues or joint issues to use bone broth. Hey, Deb. Now, I'd like to take this a step further because I've spoken to some people and the term or the definition of bone broth sometimes isn't exactly clear. Some people are making meat stock and thinking that they're having bone broth. Now, meat stock is great and meat stock is beautiful, but with bone broth, we're talking about a step ahead. Now, for example, when I talk about, you know, collagen, beauty, building skin, building or, you know, revitalizing connective tissue, bones, etc., it makes sense that you would take the cartilage and the bones of an animal, take out the goodness, and use that for your cartilage and your bones and your connective tissue and your beauty. So, to make that distinction between bone broth and stock, there are a few different things here. One thing, of course, is the type of meat. So the type of meat that you want to use in bone broth, you want to have lots of bones in it because bones are part of what provide the goodness. Bones, when boiled and boiled and boiled, will release a lot of their goodness and their power into the soup that can be then very effectively utilized by your bones. But also duration. So when you're making meat stock, you're making a soup, you're not going to be boiling the meat for extended periods of time, but to extract a lot of the goodness from the bones and the cartilage and the gelatinous meat, you want to boil for 12 to 24 hours. There are people that boil, you know, in the slow cooker for even longer. But generally, you want to pick a good cut of meat, you want to pick, you know, good meat. You want to have bones in there. You want to have the bone marrow. If you can get, you know, meat and bones with plenty of good, healthy bone marrow inside of it, that's even more powerful for you. And boil for 12 to 24 hours. Now, the difference you will see, of course, bone broth will be a lot more rich than stock, but also bone broth will go gelatinous. So if you refrigerate it, it will take on a jello-like quality, and that is all the incredibly nutritious proteins in the gelatin that you have taken out through that slow, low-heat boiling process that you can utilize that greatly differs from what you'll find in meat stock. Now, I've gotten some feedback with some people that have implemented my information that I provided on bone broth. And I've had some great feedback about that. We're talking about more energy, less energy slumps in combination with, you know, increasing more bone broth and reducing for some people that, you know, are still on more carbs and, you know, some junk food even. Bone broth has helped reduce their cravings. Bone broth has helped their mental function. Now, why is that? Well, if you consider this, bone broth is providing the nutrition that your body needs. So, although you may still have some residual cravings from, for example, the bacteria in your gut that you have fed, as you remediate that, your body is no longer craving more and more and more and more carbs to sustain itself and keep itself up, and you're experiencing the naturally associated energy slumps with that. But with bone broth, you are providing a very, very nutritious and sustained power to your body. So the body no longer needs to go crazy and make you crave all of these different foods all the time. Now, just a note here regarding, hang on a second, apologies, I'm blanking, regarding the, I was talking about energy cravings, right? So this is an interesting point. If you can drink your bone broth with the fat in it, of course, so once you boil, you're going to have a fat layer. And depending on the meat you're boiling, you may have a lot of fat. Now, if you can drink the bone broth with the fat, that's great. That's beautiful. And you are going to give yourself even more nutrition. And of course, that fat is filled with tons of cholesterol. Ooh, scary. And that cholesterol is going to be incredible in dealing with inflammation and in the synthesis of hormones, including your sex steroid hormones. So whether you're a man or a woman, based on your genetics and what your body needs, you are going to be synthesizing testosterone or estrogen or progesterone through different chemical cascades, and you are going to be improving your hormonal health. Some people that, you know, are not, particularly I can speak for men in this arena, people that used to be on very modern diets and, you know, weren't even that much into eating meat or eggs because, you know, oh, cholesterol. And, you know, I'm talking about the types of people that, you know, used to eat Weet-Bix every morning for breakfast, or, you know, cereal and oats for breakfast, and you know, that the sandwich and cheese and, you know, that kind of stuff. When they start going more meat, more bone broth, lots of eggs, 4, 5, 6 eggs a day, the increase they have in testosterone as men, I'm speaking specifically about men, that is incredibly pronounced and even uncomfortable is experienced. And this is entirely natural, and I suppose the contrast is really great for someone that was on, you know, that very dead diet and then moved to the nutrition of fats and animal products. I won't go into details, but the changes it reported in many people are absolutely phenomenal, to the point of being too much, to the point of being like, whoa, this is almost uncomfortable. Do you consider chicken also for bone broth? Chicken is fine. Chicken is great. you can make chicken bone broth. Chicken versus red meat, they have different strengths and weaknesses. So I, by all means, make your chicken bone broth, but don't also forget your red meat bone broth. You can alternate. Of course, so Plant Lady saying women need testosterone too. Yes, they do. And it's not like this myth that women don't produce testosterone. It's just a different a system. It's a different a ratio with estrogen. And it's a different, in some cases, it's a different usage. Of course, women don't have testicles to produce testosterone. So they have other systems that are used in that regard. Okay, so I've covered what gives the goodness in bone broth, cooking time, the gelatinous material. Right, so if you can drink the bone broth with the fat, great. If you can tolerate it, great. Depending on the meat, you'll have different amount of fat, depending on the if you put spices or not, depending on the type of meat. You may find that having the, you know, drinking the fat with the bone broth soup more or less tolerable. However, if you can't, then you just refrigerate it, and of course the fat rises to the top and solidifies, and then you can pull it out of the fridge, remove the fat layer. You can use that for cooking, and then you can drink the pure gelatinous bone broth without a lot of fat in your soup. So that's an option. Okay. Any questions there? The chat has been going wild. Apologies if I can't keep up with everything here. Yes, methionine is sulfur-based. Yep. I wouldn't recommend those bone broth powders, you know, those instant bone broths. I don't really think that that fits the bill in terms of providing what we need. And you know, the moment you look at it and it's all commercialized and packaged with a shelf life, where's the life in that? So I wouldn't recommend that. Unless, of course, let's say you're in a survival situation. And in that case, you know, a powdered bone broth, you know, in a time where, let's say, you can't turn on your gas, you can't have a fire or whatever, that could be a good option. You can test that out, see how your body responds. Maybe some brands and some people will have a good response to that. But, you know, as long as you can, then make it yourself, whether in a big pot or you get a slow cooker. Some people pressure cook their bone broth, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. There are some people that have had a lot of issues with pressure cookers. Wouldn't necessarily recommend that. All right, do we have any questions on this topic? All right. Then let's move on to our final segment here. The digitization of our agriculture and our food systems. So I'm going to play a number of clips. I've prepared 4 clips and a little article. This is an incredibly important topic, and I think a lot of the times this just goes right over our head. Where our food comes from is so important, but not only that, now that they are going ahead and speeding up this agenda of telling us about CO2 emissions and climate change and climate catastrophe, these are all massive, massive campaigns that are going to be used against us. And the fear and the rabid, terrified fear of the millennials and the younger generations is going to be used against everyone. because we've been brainwashed in school from the very start about climate change and climate catastrophe and CO2 emissions and blah, blah, blah. And I will be the first to talk about climate catastrophe and our destruction of the environment. But you have these generations in gradient form of going from mildly concerned to bloody terrified. You have children or young adults that are terrified. They have nightmares about, you know, our future climate catastrophe. And this fear is being directed and used against everyone without them knowing in these. It's being misdirected and channeled through these organizations, through these massive networks of funded, I don't want to say names, but I know a lot of you already know when I talk about, you know, like, you know, let's say leftist political movements, we already have a few figureheads there. I know, I'm sure you're thinking of some names. Sorry, let me actually get to this this comment and then I'll move back. Forgot to tell you guys how important bone broth is if you want to do fasting. Well, if you're doing fasting, of course, fasting has a lot of benefits in terms of rebuilding, regenerating, detoxification. But then, when you break your fast, you want to have a lot of nutrition. Thank you, Selma. Bone broth is, you know, you can start. So you start, you break your fast initially with some soup, with some bone broth. And that's also, you know, easier to get the digestive system started. Anyways, apologies for the little side point there. So the fear and this brainwashing, you know, over a number of decades is going to be utilized and is utilized very dangerously. And, you know, maybe in our, let's say, you know, communities and even our echo chambers, we don't see that. But if you go on the street, you talk to people, you talk to the younger generations, you look at the organizations, the movements, you look at, the popular ridiculous stuff, you know, you go on YouTube and you see the Just Stop Oil protesters and you see the, I think here, I'm not sure if this is a global movement with that name or just in Australia, we have these guys called Extinction Rebellion, crazy, crazy movements, crazy people. But this fear is going to be, or is, it's not going to be, it has been and is weaponized against us. Instead of looking at the industrialized, centralized destruction of us and our planet and our ecosystems, no. It's your fault because you have 20-minute showers instead of 5-minute showers, and it's your fault because you flush the toilet 5 times a day, and it's your fault because you don't recycle plastic and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to show you how even inside the alternative communities, some of these fallacies exist. And I think that maybe, you know, some things that are very obvious to me are actually very valuable information to impart, given my experience and understanding as a certified permaculture designer. That, you know, if you're not familiar, you can search permaculture, search the word permaculture and learn a little bit about it. But there are some very interesting points here. Now, instead of actually localizing our food production, meaning that instead of a large farm in Whoop Whoop, that's an Australian term, a large, you know, 5,000 hectare farm in America producing your wheat and shipping it to the UK and Australia and New Zealand and Canada and blah, 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 which is using all of these fossil fuels to process and store and package and refrigerate. Maybe not talking about wheat or grains there, you know, vegetables, fruits, etc. Instead of doing that, we could localize our food production, meaning that we grow our food close to us. Now imagine what would happen if we're all growing our food close to us. And let's say not even necessarily, you know, in urban areas in the backyard. It doesn't have to be in the backyard. Each block can have a community garden. What will happen? People will have control over their food. They will have control over their nutrition. And there will be massive, massive commercial losses. When you look at the statistics about farming, when you look at the soldiers' graveyards of hundreds of acres of citrus fruit, just citrus fruit, of thousands of acres of olive groves, a soldier's graveyard of just lines and lines and lines of eroded soil and olives. Is that natural? How much chemical input will you need to create a output that can be sold off by the farmer? And I think we all know, I mean, Tony has been very vocal over the years, and I really appreciate that. And I don't think I'd really know about that aspect as much without Tony talking about this. Farmers are really suffering. So now, I was looking for our Australians here. I was looking at an old Coles magazine, and I saw this, and this got me thinking. Finding new technologies for Aussie farmers. Coles launched the Coles Nurture Fund. For those that don't know, Coles is like a supermarket chain here. Of course, you know, when the massive scamdemic hit, they were making what I would imagine is billions of dollars of profit because, you know, the local grocery shop is, and the local farmer's market is allegedly very dangerous. But, you know, COVID is, you know, a very smart virus. And it just knows, okay, this is Coles. These are our big industrial, you know, multinational chains. So, you know, we're not going to go near them because, you know, commercial interests, tons of money, centralization of food, you know, only two packs of toilet paper, everybody. Get those hand sanitizers and those muzzles, I mean masks. So that's what Coles is. Initiative in April 2015 to help its Aussie producers grow and innovate. Since then, more than $19 million in funding has been offered to 50 different businesses across Australia, enabling them to develop new processes and technologies. So why would a company like Coles be investing in this? Well, they would be investing in this because there is a commercial interest and they're going to be making money. Red Gem Growers and Packers in Victoria has been supplying Coles with potatoes for more than 30 years. Yeah, eroding soil and destroying the environment and, you know, providing us beautiful levels of aluminium, cadmium, and arsenic in our potatoes. Of course, if you didn't know this, actually, you know what, I'm not going to say this. We talk about different things, we talk about different stresses in our environment. And people listen to it and they go OCD about it and they panic about it. I was going to make a comment about, you know, accumulation in potatoes, specifically potato plants and the tubers, and never mind, I'm going to leave that out. Just remember, if you're panicking about any of these things, that your body can deal with and is dealing with whatever toxicity you are faced with. You just have to help, aid, support, and preferably reduce your intake of toxic materials. Okay, third generation father-son growers, blah, 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 and blah, 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 received a $350,000 interest-free loan to help fund. Ooh, so what would these guys be funding? An interest-free loan. Help fund revolutionary X-ray technology. Hang on, I thought we were talking about farming. Now we're talking about X-ray technology, huh? Using this technology, they're now able to efficiently size and sort potatoes, as well as check for imperfections such as insect holes, growth cracks, and excessive dirt clumping. We're delighted to support Red Gem's vision to enhance the quality of their produce to customers. So we're producing all of this food, and now we need technology to help us produce it. We have all of these. This is a very important concept in permaculture, where you have your inputs and your outputs. Now, in a natural system, in a, let's say, a mature forest, the system is self-sustaining, which means that you can produce massive amounts of fruit and other materials, like even a wood, you know, timber, bamboo, etc., with no external inputs, which means that the system feeds itself and the system multiplies. So the soil is always getting better. The nutrition in your food is always getting better. You're improving through, literally through your forest, you're improving the climate, and you're improving the water systems, and you're recharging the aquifers, the underground water through the roots of the larger trees. As opposed to your industrial graveyard monoculture, which is just one crop for thousands of acres. This system does not feed itself. This system does not improve anything, which means that you need an ever-increasing amount of energy inputs. You need a chemical fertilizer and a chemical fungicide and a chemical herbicide. If you were growing this food with a more natural approach, smaller scale, but more intense, biodiverse, using the concepts in nature that we can utilize for our benefit and for the soil's benefit and for our ecosystem's benefit, we have more energy inputs and more energy inputs. Fungicides, herbicides, insecticides, and you need more and more, and the result is more and more and more problematic. This is one of the reasons why farmers are making such great losses, because they're destroying the soil, they're destroying their plants, and they're destroying the ecosystem. So you get a more and more and more pronounced result. You get a more dangerous bacteria, a more dangerous fungus, a more damaging pest. And you need more and more and more chemicals. That is more energy inputs for the same output, the same wheat, the same barley, the same rice, etc. So now we need technology. We need technology to help us. And that is how we're going to usher in the sustainable era of food production, where one man owns a majority share of America's farmland, and he uses technology to make it sustainable. Tell me, how is using more electricity sustainable agriculture? Because that sounds to me like all you're doing is using more, energy inputs. So I'm going to play some clips. Firstly, Australia, and then some American things.
Australia's reputation for clean, green, and safe produce makes us a compelling destination to develop, commercialise, scale, and source the next generation of agriculture and food technologies.
Australia's agri-food sector is about a $60 billion industry. In fact, the country's on a mission to lift that to $100 billion by 2030.
Australia's tip...
$60 billion to $100 billion by 2030. So, Agenda 2030. It's really going great in terms of reducing your footprint.
Typically an early adopter of technology across every industry, including agriculture. Australia is such a big country. We grow every crop there is, from tropical fruits all the way down to cool climate wine. And what that means is...
And I'll leave the link in the show notes. If you watch the video, you watch the visuals and the images that they're putting up, it is... I mean, as a permaculture designer, I look at that and it's just, it hurts my heart, you know, seeing the systems that they show as, like, you know, abundant food production, And really all I see is just death and destruction.
That you can develop your product and test it in a whole lot of different crop types.
One of the standout features of Australian ag innovation is the growing network of smart farms. These are full-scale commercially operating farms anchored by research organisations like universities or state government agencies. We are truly a...
Smart farms. Now Apple needs to come out with the new iFarm.
...network of landscape laboratories.
We have a fantastic research sector. We have world-leading universities creating really skilled people. We also have a proud tradition of funding to support collaboration between universities and the agriculture sector.
We're really open for business to attract collaborators and people to come here and help make a difference.
We also have great support from government in things like R&D tax credits that are particularly helpful for early stage businesses.
The agri-tech, agri-food job market in Australia is absolutely powering along.
Absolutely powering along, mate. So when you look at that, this is being used against everyone. And the environmental organizations and the millions of drones and clones that are clones, actually, I suppose, the drones of people that are overtaken by this fear, climate catastrophe, they are all being misdirected into this line of thinking. Instead of taking responsibility, growing a food garden, right? Doing what they want. Sure, you know, you want to reduce your plastic usage. Great, I'll support that, no problem. Stop packaging food and sending it thousands of miles. But none of these climate activists or vegans are actually doing what they need to help repair the environment. What they're doing instead is feeding into the centralized production of our food and the centralized control of our food and just destroying the environment that they're so scared about. So this is hilarious. When you think about where this is going, think about the effect. The applications of a centralized food system in future pandemics, in a social credit system. These activists are already, you know, deeply heading in the socialist communist direction. You can see that in many of their ideologies. And I've spoken to some of them. And, you know, they don't even realize how communist their mentality is. What could go wrong with centralizing our food? Okay, I'll expand on that later. I don't want to speak ahead of time too much because I have some more clips that I'll be commenting on. The next one is about a fully automated farm in America.
App Harvest is built on this concept that everybody deserves access to healthy fruits and vegetables.
Everyone deserves access to healthy fruits and vegetables. I agree. How do you do that? By building massive industrial scale factories for food that concentrate heavy metal buildup in the soil and in our food, that have to use chemicals to deal with the natural ecosystem's immune response to the abominations that are enforced, the law and order that is enforced on natural systems.
And we have to figure out how to grow more food with less resources. For us, it's how do we...
More food with less resources. So does that mean automating everything using robots and computers, and using AI? So AI has massive energy requirements, has massive GPU requirements. Who's making all of them GPUs that the AI models run on? What's going into those chips? Ooh, silicon. Gallons of water. Actually, let's look at, let me Google this right live. How much water to make a GPU? You know, what's the carbon output? They'll tell you how much water is necessary to make an avocado for you. My point here is that we're not talking about less energy inputs. We're talking about more energy inputs, more electricity, more sensors in the soil, sensors in the plants, automated irrigation systems, automated fertilization systems, chemical systems, central systems where you oversee the production, central systems and databases where you store all of the information.
We use modern technology, you know, but put nature first.
The global implications of doing high-tech indoor farms is that you can grow a lot more food with a lot fewer resources and much less impact on the environment. And that's critical for the future. When you look at the numbers on what's happening with water shortages, the depletion of soil, and...
Water shortages. What's causing water shortages? What's causing the depletion of soil? It's right there in front of everyone, but they'll never connect the dots for you. If you're interested in this, I'd actually highly recommend you learn more about permaculture. Maybe take I know it's an investment, but you know, both in terms of time and money, but take a permaculture design certificate course, and you will never look at the world again in this aspect. The world will change before your eyes in an unbelievable way. So now let's look at this. So of course NVIDIA is for my techies. Listening, NVIDIA is one of the biggest graphics card creators. Graphics cards are what are most generally used for running AI models. The GPU is made up, an average GPU is made up of 1.7 billion transistors, so 1.7 billion logic gates. Let's see here. The environmental impact of the mining of rare earth metals for the manufacturing of graphics cards is exorbitantly high, with the greenhouse gases being released making up around 50% of emissions. Something needs to be done in order to manage these impacts. So the solution is you need to reduce your electricity and pay a tax for this and a tax for that and go cold in the winter, but we will now use AI to run your farms. And meanwhile, we'll complain about water shortage, which we've depleted because we've abused the water and abused the land. And we'll complain about soil depletion. And we'll talk about, deforestation. Oh, no. What's the solution to deforestation? If you wanted to rebuild 95% of the world's forests, what would you do? Localize food production and ensure a solid and sustainable system for wood production. Those are the two biggest things. Nobody's going to make billions of dollars off of that. No, it's not billions, it's trillions of dollars off of that.
Climate severe weather events that are wiping out crops, it is now. It's not the future. We need to be doing this now.
So weather events, extreme weather events, now mean that we need to automate and control our food more, grow our food in massive indoor automated silos.
Right now, we've set out to not only open this Berea facility, which will be one of the largest leafy green facilities in the U.S., but build a network of high-tech farms here in central Appalachia that cross leafy greens, strawberries, tomatoes, and other vine crops. We started farming thousands of years ago, and technology has advanced from the wheel to the tractor to now AI and robotics and software and sensors. Combining that into how we grow food and align with the planet better, that is our mission. The problems happening in the western part of the U.S. right now are dire. We have to use our water in a more precious way. To me, that problem of how do we solve our water crisis in the U.S., we do it with farms like this.
If you want to know a little bit about water conservation, go to youtube.com and search the Dead Sea Project. Search Greening the Desert. Yeah, that's right. It's not the Dead Sea Project. It's not called the Dead Sea. It's a project in the Dead Sea. Search Greening the Desert. Greening the Desert, Jeff Lawton. And look at what has been done in the driest, saltiest place on Earth.
This indoor farm, you can see, has some unique features. We use 90% less water than traditional farms. And the reason is our indoor farm is a closed system. We capture rainwater on our roof. We send it through gullies and pipes into a...
So rainwater capture. Okay, that's great. No problem with that. Good on you guys. But then...
A retention pond. And then we make sure, using sensors, that the plants only get what they actually need. So our indoor farms and...
Sensors in the soils, in the plants. How long has Tony been talking about this for?
And this type of contactless growing benefits both food safety and food waste. We don't have concerns about E. coli. We've heard about E. coli outbreaks this summer. And indoor farms can be very efficient because we can grow 24/7. We have a very large roof with glass panels, which means we use a lot of passive solar. But we also use lighting overnight to continue to help the plants grow. LED lighting has been a huge innovation that's really enabled this sector to be much more energy efficient. But I think the energy to support this type of farming is where we're going to see tremendous innovation over the next 5 years. So I think that's coming, and that's really exciting to me.
Farming is not what you think of when you think of your grandma or grandpa riding a tractor around. And we respect that, and we appreciate the tradition of farming. But farming is smartphones and tablets to operate software and sensors and use technology to grow food. And we have to now plant that seed with young people to think of careers and future.
Ooh, we need to plant that seed with young people to use phones and tablets for farming and software and AI and sensors.
Inside of a pathway of farming that didn't exist 20 years ago.
My name is Jacob Ball. I'm the agriculture teacher at Carter G. Woodson Academy. Carter G. Woodson Academy is an all-male college preparatory program. We teach through the lens of African-American history and culture and also incorporate Hispanic history and culture. So the container farm that we're fortunate to have here is a shipping container that has been retrofitted as a hydroponic farm. We are one of 12.
We teach about African and Hispanic traditional culture. And look at our hydroponic crate. Now, if you are forced, you know, if you live somewhere and you want to grow your own food and you just, like, you can't have pots, you don't have a backyard or a front yard, fine. If you have to make a hydroponic system, fine. But I'd really recommend that you avoid that. You're going to be, it's a very synthetic, very man-made system with tons of plastic. And then you get into the hydroponic chemicals and feed them with this chemical and mix that chemical and blah, 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 blah.
12 schools in the Eastern Kentucky region that are fortunate to be partnering with AppHarvest. As more and more schools come on board, we're actually building a network of teachers that are collaborating together with other students across the region. We've kind of...
So note that this, if you watch that video, that's indoors. So what are they using? Oh, they're using LED grow lights in there.
I learned the best way to get our nutrient levels, pH, water, light, temperature, humidity. We control all those factors.
So nutrient levels, what nutrients do you think they're measuring? Do you think they're measuring boron and zinc? Of course, in industrial farming, the zinc actually can rise to very toxic levels. And if you're using food scraps from, you know, industrially produced food, here's an important tip to all the gardeners. Please be very careful because, you know, of course, your food scraps is your nitrogen material, your green material. And so when you're making compost, when you're putting it in the worm farm, etc., use an increase a greater amount of round material. Use your carbons, your mulches, even cardboard, whatever it is, so that that carbon can help neutralize that heavy metal buildup. Even heavy, you know, a buildup of metals that we normally associate as healthy or good. But what are they measuring inside of those soils, inside of those systems? They're not measuring zinc and boron and iodine and potassium. Oh no, they're measuring three things: nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. And that's it. Those are the only three things, because they're the only three elements that they need to pump the plant full of to get it to grow, to be very green looking, to flower, and to fruit. And that's it.
For the best growing environment. Basically, every 2 weeks we're harvesting, and then it's going to local community members through a CSA program or to our local cafeteria.
I'm really proud of myself. I'm really proud of this program. Hopefully, in the future, I'll be able to show my kids just how much we've been able to accomplish in just 4 years.
Agriculture is a way that students can get involved in a career, get involved in an industry that plays such an important role in the sustainability of our planet, the sustainability of our societies.
I think the more we can get these systems in place and continuously improve them, which there's so much potential for in the future and so many opportunities to bring in more innovation, more high-tech strategies, it's just going to benefit us as a region and as a country to be self-sufficient in terms of our food.
Innovate or die. You know, we're on this finite planet, this rock that's flying around a sun called planet Earth, and it's burning. We can either use technology.
It's burning. We can either use technology. Notice immediately, oh, the planet is burning. So we need to use technology. How did you connect the two?
We can innovate, or we can see things crumble around us. So this is a mission, it's a career, and what can we do to use private sector tools, use technology, build stuff, and try to give us a fighting chance to hand a better future to that next generation? And I truly believe AppHarvest is a part of that.
All right, now we move on to Bill Gates. And we move on to America, and I won't reference the next video, because I do not want to promote in any way these people. You may recognize them, you may not, I don't know. But even the alternative people, the awake people, they're not on it at all. In fact, they are part of the problem in brainwashing you. Listen to this.
All right, well, are they coming for your home garden now? Because your home garden has a higher carbon footprint than an industrial garden. I mean, that's kind of a no-duh, but okay, we're going to go through this. Because this new study makes me think that maybe they are. Here's a new study that suggests that...
Of course, there's been a lot of legislation secretively passed over the last few years, I think, since the scamdemic, regarding, you know, cracking down on home gardeners. And that's something Tony's been talking about.
Urban gardens have a higher carbon footprint than conventionally grown produce.
Listen to what she says.
This study research say gardens like this one, they're bad for the earth, worse than conventional farming. Now, why?
So this study is saying that your local or your home garden is worse for the environment than a 5,000 dead men's graveyard of wheat over 5,000 acres.
Why this worries me is because when we see globalists tell you what has a high carbon footprint, then they're signaling to us what they're going to start tamping down on. What that makes me think of is collectivization, which we're going to talk about in a second. But this is like, duh, right? Like anything I make at home is going to be more efficient if it scales. Like,
not true. Not true. This is the tunnel vision, isolated lab approach to understanding a system. And this is the height of folly. I was listening to this, you know, okay, these guys are alternative and they're talking about, you know, Bill Gates buying up farmland. This is going to be interesting. And you get this, the very start. Oh, well, you know, your home garden is going to be less efficient. It's a no-da. She keeps on saying that. It's a no-da. You know, your farmland isn't going to be as efficient as your home garden. Or sorry, your home garden is going to be a lot less efficient than your farm. Incorrect. Now, why is that incorrect? They're going to tell you that, you know, a farm will have less water and less chemicals and blah, 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 while, you know, for your home garden, you need to buy all this. Let's say you're having a potted garden, you need all this soil, or you're doing raised beds, you need all this soil, and you need blah, 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 blah. Of course, they're not going to factor in a home garden that builds soil. I think our home gardeners know what I'm talking about when we talk about building soil. We're talking about instant gardens, compost, various types of compost, of course, worm farms, chop and drop mulching, you know, green manure, that kind of stuff. So they're not going to factor that in, of course not. But this is a very tunnel vision approach. So they tell you that, let's say, a farm for one tomato will use less water than you. Okay. What happens then when that tomato is, and it's in that video, by the way, it's in that video, and you can watch, like, you know, all of these tractors, like, automatically pulling out carrots and rolling and wrapping hay bales and that kind of stuff. So you're using electricity and fossil fuels, right? Fossil fuels for your harvesting. And then you need to process, clean, assess with x-rays now, package again. So you put it in crate, you wrap, and then you put it in punnets, and then you put it in crates, and more and more and more plastic. Oh no, plastic. And then you refrigerate it, and you send it through a plane, and then through a truck, and then through another truck, and then to a distribution facility in another country, and then in another truck down to your local supermarket. And then there, it is unpacked and refrigerated again. The energy inputs for that. When I grow a tomato in my backyard, I go out and I pick it and I eat it, and it's still alive. And I can guarantee you there's a whole lot more life in that tomato than the crap that they produce commercially. And you can taste it. You will taste the difference, and you will feel the difference for anyone that has eaten fresh, homegrown food, even not, you know, not in the best soil or not in the best circumstances. Not with the best weather, and you will feel the difference. You will taste the difference. You will know the difference. So this is that tunnel vision where that study would have firstly taken a home garden, as in their definition of a home garden, and done some maths, some cute little mathematical equations of, you know, resources over area and blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. And they're not factoring in everything else. I don't package my tomatoes before I eat them. I put them in a bowl and I take them to the kitchen. So even the big alternative people are incredibly lost, and they may be part of this agenda on some level.
Okay, put another way,
it's less efficient at home.
Everything right. is less efficient at home.
Like, if
right?
you try to build, like, your own car,
everything is less efficient at home, right?
It's not going to probably be as efficient as Ford can do it.
Absolutely. You can make that argument with everything, right? That if it's made in a factory versus me with my own hands, there's going to be less carbon footprint of all the McDonald's hamburgers than what I make in my house.
There's less carbon footprint for McDonald's. Has anyone watched any of those documentaries about McDonald's and how they make that that gunk they call food? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You're telling me that cooking myself a beautiful pot of bone broth is the same as that those rocks, those rocks and that dirt that they flavor and call food at McDonald's. Unbelievable.
Chinese have a word for this. I forget what it is now. And of course, industrial farming is going to be more efficient with farms like this. Here's a video that I just thought you might enjoy watching, because I could watch this all day.
That's like, amazing.
I don't pick apples and carrots to this efficiency.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So duh.
That is not efficient. So if you watch, for Plant Lady that listened to that, right? You know, they're showing you these beautiful videos about carrots being harvested with a tractor and all of this automated stuff. That is not efficient. That is not healthy. That is, even by their definition, is not good for the environment. And that is certainly not going to be healthy for you. Those fumes, just the fumes from the tractor, just the chemicals released from the fumes in the tractor, will settle on the soil and be a part of your food.
Isn't this fun?
It's so satisfying.
It's so satisfying to watch that. I'm going to let this run while I talk. The study further showed that fruit is found to be 8.6 times more eco-friendly when grown conventionally compared to a city.
That is an outrageous claim.
Whereas vegetables are 5.8 times better for the environment when left to the professionals. I think the Japanese concept of Taizen is like automation makes things more efficient and you learn as you do it, right?
Right.
Automation makes things more efficient. These are a massive, massive alternative truther outlet, media company. Massive production. As far as I can tell. And this is what they're saying.
So, okay, no duh, right? So why is this a concern, this study? Is there an agenda to stop you from doing this?
Yes.
Could this be used against you?
Yes.
Right, and so I just want to remind you that we're not too far off from periods of history where people were starved to death in order to control them. One period was the collectivization period we just mentioned in the previous segment under the Stalin-led Soviet Union. He ordered police to seize privately held farms in Ukraine and turn those farms into grain farms. And those people had nothing left except for what the government would dole out to them, which was practically nothing. More than 1 million Ukrainian farmers were exiled and tens of thousands starved, many of them children. Because when people are discouraged from growing their own food, I tend to get a little worried. Who would fund a study like this, right? And it seems to go hand in hand with the rhetoric at this year's World Economic Forum in Davos, where crazies like this lady said farming is a problem and we need to start punishing people who do it.
I mean, ecocide as a word is becoming better known around the world, and the concept is generally mass damage and destruction of nature. But legally speaking, what our organisation and other collaborators aim to do is to have this recognised legally as a serious crime. Because one of the issues that sort of pervades all of this discussion is that we have a kind of cultural, very ingrained habit of not taking damage to nature as seriously as we take damage to people and property. And that, I mean, you know, if you're campaigning for human rights, at least you know mass murder, torture, all of these things are serious crimes. But there's no equivalent in the environmental space.
There is an equivalent in the environmental space. It's called raping the land for commercial gain.
An international crime like genocide that involves a specific intent. With ecocide, what we see is actually what people are trying to do, what businesses are trying to do, is make money, is farm, is fish, is do all of these things that are producing energy and so on as well. But what's missing is the awareness and the conscience around the side effects, around the collateral damage that happens with that.
Okay. So I don't know how she intends to eat, but here's another lady who says that, yeah, because farming is so problematic, just get used to AI-made food.
A lot of our things that what you can do is scarcity, and we have products which you can have make via biology. It's so that you can replace or augment natural products, especially with climate change making them more difficult to produce.
Changing, replacing, augmenting natural products. More synthetics. More industrialization. And more chemical inputs into our food.
The other thing that you can use with AI is increase your solution space. So if you love the taste and aroma of vanilla, can we have something that's reminiscent of that, that is new to the world? And using AI to increase that solution space that a human alone would not be able to do. So that's something we're definitely leveraging. Using receptor biology data and millions of data points there, using our understanding of taste and smell to identify what can be new that can help consumers to have sustainable solutions that are also really, you know, desirable, right?
Can you imagine having dinner with that woman? Yeah, we're not going to have vanilla dessert tonight, but I did bring a Yankee candle.
You can chew on that.
You can chew on that, or I'm going to light it. You can just smell that Yankee vanilla candle.
By the way, we have AI it's vanilla. Like we already have synthetic vanilla. But go ahead.
It's the homeopathy of dinner. Just a little bit of what you want to eat in there, smell.
Smell, but you can't eat it.
Right.
The sad thing is, like, we're already kind of seeing that happen because the farmers that are subsidized in the United States are the ones that are growing, like, corn for high fructose corn syrup and feed for animals and things. And actual farmers are being suffocated and not being subsidized. So they're, you know, losing. And then you have even smaller farmers that are doing, like, organic meat and organic vegetables that get no subsidies at all. So it's already happening. They're starting to weed out actual farmers and actual food. And Bill Gates is buying up all this property. So, I mean, it's basically the groundwork's being laid for that to happen.
Yeah, and now you have these studies that are trying to force this hand, right? So now we have these studies, and now you're going to have the globalists saying we need to get rid of these small farms and roll them into the bigger farms.
Right, you shouldn't be farming. It should only be mass-produced things that we tell you and we give you.
And by the way, it won't be meat. It'll be beyond meat. It'll be a fake meat burger.
Right. And climate
and it's
research.
It's going to have mRNA in it.
Probably. Climate.
This is, I saw a comment earlier. mRNA in it. What does that mean? mRNA is allegedly a genetic code produced through DNA to RNA to mRNA that goes into the ribosome of the cell and instructs it to produce a protein. Now, synthetic mRNA should be destroyed by the body immediately upon entry. Immediately we'll be able to detect this genetic material is not of my own. I'm going to destroy it. Now, allegedly, with the injectable, what they did, allegedly, is that they found a way, they used some, of course it was all synthetic, they used some synthetic letters and they cloaked it and blah blah blah, and they managed to make it so that the body does not destroy this mRNA. But either way, this is not about mRNA. Please drop that kind of tunnel visioned approach to it. I understand why, you know, that's a concern. Of course, we don't want foreign genetics in our food. We don't want foreign genetics in us. That's really a problem with multiple reasons. But either broaden your terminology, so say genetics in our food, or we're talking about foreign proteins. Because what is the mRNA going in and doing then? It's going to the ribosome and instructing it to create proteins, allegedly. Now, of course, I actually had planned to do a full episode on this. You know, what's actually going on inside of those injectables, because we haven't seen any proof that there's any mRNA inside of those injectables. Some microscopy of some of those vials didn't have any genetic material at all. Some had DNA and no mRNA, and some allegedly had mRNA and DNA. What nobody will tell you is that they don't know what's inside of the injectable. And all we are doing is following what they tell us, and then using what they tell us to talk about how dangerous those injectables are. what we do seem to be seeing inside of people is something far, far more insane, which is an identifiable network address using the Bluetooth protocol coming outside of people. I mean, we can prove that. We can prove that there's a self-assembly process of some sort going on inside of these vials under certain microscopy and certain conditions. We can prove that. But what's actually inside of that, nobody knows. Will they, you know, when they get those mRNA, so-called mRNA injectables for the livestock, will it really be, you know, some genetic operating system delivery? I don't know. But maybe just step away a little bit from that, like laser focus on mRNA, because it really doesn't mean as much as people think it does. And it's not necessarily as provable as a lot of people think it is, in my opinion. That's a very specific opinion of mine personally that I have from what I've seen, and that could easily change, develop, adapt in the future as I get more information. This is just my conclusion with the information that I've been provided and that I've seen and from my research.
Researchers have by no means concluded that carbon output drives climate change, but they're still taking the time to calculate it from your raised garden bed. And they warned us, here's a summary from the World Economic Forum themselves about their Davos summit, saying that, you know, they're not going to use the term phase out anymore. They did that a lot in 2023 and it made people nervous. Instead, they're going to say contribute to transitioning away from. Does that make you feel better? So they may say this about your home garden. They're not going to phase it out, but you will contribute to transitioning away from home gardening for the climate. How do you feel about that?
So this is part of the agenda. So even if you can just grow a few little pots, you know, in your apartment of sage and rosemary and thyme that you can use for your herbal teas, for your Tony Pantelaresco patented radiation recovery concoction, that is a step ahead.
Bill Gates has been snatching up 242,000 acres of farmland across the U.S., enough to make him the top private farmland owner in America. According to the Land Report, the tech billionaire has been purchasing agricultural land for years, building a massive portfolio of farmland in 18 states. His largest holdings are more than 69,000 acres in Louisiana, almost 48,000 acres in Arkansas, and about 20,500 acres in Nebraska. Additionally, he has a stake in 25,750 acres of traditional land in Phoenix, Arizona, which is being developed as a new suburb. It's not clear how Gates' farmland is being used or whether any of the land is being set aside for conservation. This is not Gates' only foray into agriculture. In 2008, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced $306 million in grants to promote high-yield, sustainable agriculture among farmers in
sub-Saharan
Africa and South Asia. The foundation also invested in the development of super crops resistant to climate change and higher-yield dairy cows. While Gates may be the country's biggest farmer,
higher-yield dairy cows, pumping them with hormones,
landowner, he's not the largest individual landowner. According to the Land Report's list of the top 100 American land...
Listen to this. The top 100 American landowners. We always have our figureheads, and then we have figures that aren't heads.
Donors, Liberty Media Chair John Malone is the largest landowner with 2.2 million acres of ranches and forests.
You probably haven't heard that name before. I hadn't. You can search Liberty Media Corporation, but I thought that's just a little thing in there. You know, talking about the centralization of food by these people, I thought this is also an interesting video to play to show to people that, you know, we talk about like the big guys, Gil Bates, for example, but there are always these people that aren't, there are always people that aren't figureheads that are even more involved that we just don't know about because they don't have a media presence.
He just explained. He just went through the whole explanation there about how everything's fucked.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We turned out to be an hour and 35 minutes show, which I hope you all enjoyed this. I hope you gained something. I you know, for the future episodes, I won't be focused as much on, you know, filling 2 hours, but just on providing interesting, important, hopefully very insightful information and conversation, discussion. Thank you once more. Thank you for everyone. Thank you to everyone that checked up on me, that's been continuing with the feedback. I'm really grateful that, you know, the last show had, you know, a great reception and a lot of people liked it. And so, you know, I'll do my best to integrate that feedback and continue with valuable information in the future. Thank you, everybody. Okay. And French, I got your email. I know it's been a little while. I'll respond to you as soon as possible. All right. Thanks, everybody. And let's play Tony's outro.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Tony Pantalaresco's show.
Nanu, Nanu.
Oh, Canadum. He just explained. He just went through the whole explanation there about how everything's fucked.
Orgasmically organic.
Share the show. Alrighty, to say at the end of these shows, read your Gospels, read what Jesus had to say, read how he lived, read what he did. Okay, thanks for tuning in. As I always say at the end of these shows, we are still here by the grace of God. Remember that. So till then, we are here. We're still here by the grace of God.
By the grace of God.
By the grace of God.
So till the next show.
To your health.
To your health.
To your health.
Till the next segment.
Take care.
Take care.
Alright, talk to you in a bit.